This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Our next story is about a couple of things. Firstly, are you willing to pay for reputable news? Secondly, how do we define reputable? So this is coming from this year's Digital News Report, where an online survey of 75,000 people in 38 countries about their news habits has been published. The good news from the report: more people are worried about misinformation than ever and are turning to more reputable sources of information. The bad news is that no one is really willing to pay for good journalism, which is an ongoing issue.
So let's look a bit more in depth in the report. Now, across all those countries, 55% of people said they were concerned about misinformation. And in many places, the trend is upwards, despite the efforts of both governments and social media firms to counter it. The report also found that around a quarter are responding by turning to more reputable sources of news. But what constitutes a reputable news source is left to respondents to determine.
So that is the main thing, I think, that I'm curious about, which is how do we ever decide who is a good news source, who is a reputable news source? Because obviously, different people along the political spectrum are going to have different preferences for this. And that's why you hear fake news as an accusation being lobbied at institutions really, like the BBC even, who have long been considered a bastion of, you know, fair reporting, and now are having to deal with this in this new world where what is correct, you know, what is truthful seems to be determined on any given day by sometimes how conspiracy-minded you are, but also how indoctrinated you are into certain ways of thinking.
And also about how major the issues are. So in the report, they do warn that polarizing issues like Brexit and climate change are also leading some to question whether the corporation, the big boys, the men in power, is pushing or suppressing agendas.
And on top of that, like we said earlier, also people don't seem to be more willing to pay for quality journalism. And that also has me wondering whether or not we are going to see people pushing the boundaries on clickbaitiness, which is something that we have also seen in the spirit or in the desire to try to gain more clicks, more eyes. You know, we are finding news outlets caught between a rock and a hard place. On the one hand, you want to be fair and balanced and do the job of, do the job that you're supposed to do. On the other hand, you need to make money.
Yeah, and it's likely something that the news organizations around the world have kind of put themselves in. It's a place that they've kind of put themselves in the sense that, so when the internet first came around, not many were willing to charge a price to read and put up a paywall online, simply because of the fact that, well, the internet, what is that anyway? It's not going to catch on. My paper's too strong. I'm getting in great ad revenue. Nothing's going to change. We're just going to keep that up. So they never really charged. And till today, because of that problem where it's just perpetuated the habit that news online should be free, that they've never really been successful at being able to either put up paywalls or even a subscriber wall where you, in some instances, can get extra content if you want. That doesn't really seem to be working out.
Yeah, also because people are sophisticated enough to know how to bypass that. So that is an issue. Now, we're going to be trying to tackle this issue of the paywall, as well as reputation and credibility of news sources, after this with our guest, Lau Chak On, who is the co-founder and editor-in-chief of ChiliSauce.my. So stay tuned for that. This is The Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Good evening. It's Lynn and Kelvin talking today about the issue of paywalls and how increasingly there is a longing for good reporting when it comes to journalism, but equally there is a longing to not pay for that journalism. So it's a two-pronged question. How do you determine what is a reputable news source? And then on top of that, what is the issue with paying? How do we get people to pay for that? We would like to hear from you. Who do you go to for your news? How did you decide that they were the news source that you could trust? And do you pay for your news? We'd like to hear. 7733-2900 is the number to call. WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. On the line with us is Lau Chak On, co-founder and editor-in-chief of ChiliSauce.my. Chak, thanks for holding and for joining us this evening.
Hey, no worries, Simon. How's it going?
Good, thank you. So first things first, when it comes to getting people to pay for news, is it the quality of journalism that matters? What other factors kind of enter the picture?
I think it's user behavior. So it's a thing where, you know, people on the internet have not been used to paying for things. And it's something like quite new to us. If we can get it for free, then why would we, you know, pay for it somewhere else? And you see really illogical cases of this everywhere. Like people are willing to pay $15 for a latte, but not $1 to use WhatsApp for a year. You know, so that dynamic has been there since the start, and it's pretty difficult to change because everyone kind of supports it. Like publishers, to a certain extent, support it as well because we offer content for free. So if one of our colleagues starts charging, then everyone from that channel is going to go like, hey, I can get it free on this site instead, so why not just go there?
And I guess with that, for news sites which have chosen to put up a paywall, whether it's local or international, how well have paywalls worked in general? And has it worked better in certain countries and contexts?
Okay, so I don't have local figures on this. From what I've spoken to with my colleagues at Malaysia Kini, I think they're doing okay with their paywall, but they still have to turn to advertising at some point in time. As for the rest, I don't think any particular online publication is doing well with paywalls in Malaysia. Overseas, I think I read recently that the New York Times is like 13 times its revenue due to subscriptions, but it's a different climate as well. Mm-hmm. I believe, like, you know, when there's a big bad enemy or whatever it is, then, you know, people might be more willing to pay for an underdog to stand up to them. I'm interested to see how the New York Times subscriptions goes up or down after, you know, a change in government.
And when it comes to our user behavior, I suppose local user behavior, do you think that we're ever going to get used to the idea that we have to pay for our news, especially if it's being consumed online?
Oh man, this is a tough one. it's so hard to start it. And the thing is, like, when you do a paywall, it doesn't really address how people consume information these days. So if you think about, you know, the average person, they're not going to go to a homepage. So most of us don't go to homepages anymore, right? We don't go to the star.com, not mine. We click on the star link maybe off, you know, Facebook or Google, or maybe Chrome recommends us something, you know? So the audiences are not captive. They're only captive to Google and Facebook. So by that regard, you can't, you know, put a paywall on one site so then people will stop clicking on your links, you know? I don't access all my information through The Guardian. I can access it through the BBC. You know, The Star covers it probably. Malay Mail covers it. So it's difficult to put up a paywall. It's more of like getting people to support you. I feel that's a much stronger inclination. So, you know, like doing the right thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and at the moment, I guess, it's just a constant fight for eyes, for blinks, for attention. And news sites not only have each other to fight with, they also have the likes of YouTube, they also have the likes of Spotify and Netflix. How can news sites manage in light of all this competition?
Oh, gosh, that's another big one. So the thing is, like, you still need people to go out and get information every day. That's what news organizations have been doing, you know, for the last couple of hundred years. And the problem right now is that the incentive to do that is getting less and less by the day. And I don't mean organizations like Chili Sauce, because, you know, honestly, Chili Sauce is not a news organization. We take what's going on and we try and redigest it for people. So if you want to try and understand that in terms of a metaphor, think of us as a restaurant. Think of news organizations that say at Malaysia Kini as farmers. So farmers go out and, you know, get vegetables and live crops and all that kind of thing. And then sometimes people want to cook themselves, so they'll go out and get, like, vegetables. And sometimes they want someone to cook for them, and they'll come to Chili Sauce and get their information from us instead. But if no one's paying for the vegetables anymore, then restaurants have nothing to cook. You know, so that's going to be an issue moving forward. To be honest, journalists themselves right now don't actually know how to solve this. And it's showing in terms of the, I think you've seen a lot of news of a lot of news organizations letting people go, people plagiarizing each other as well, because, you know, obviously now there's less manpower. They still have an obligation to churn stories out and so on and so forth. So it's really a difficult place to be as a journalist today, I think.
And I just wanted to bring it back to something you mentioned earlier, which was tying the New York Times and their surge in some ways to the fact that Donald Trump has made them public enemy number one in some of his...
I didn't say Donald Trump, but yeah, you said it, so it's fine.
Yes, yes, I went there. But we are seeing that, and that is the case. We are also seeing other news sites having to deal with that. I mean, even locally, internationally, politicians sometimes say, oh, you know, you're biased, you're being manipulated.
Yep.
How do you think people can play this to their advantage? Because on the one hand, you might have, if anything, a drop in subscribers because people go, that's right, there is no such thing as a fair media. How do you then try to, you know, turn yourself into the hero of the situation?
Well, I mean, personally for us at 2D Sauce, we never said that we were fair because I don't think it's possible for people to report without some form of bias. But you try to be balanced. You know, and ideally, every journalist out there is trying to be balanced. Unfortunately, the problem is a lot of outlets out there are surviving on page views, the number of page views that they get. And it's a lot easier to get a page view when you pander compared to when you challenge. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can just say, you know, the person that you hate is hated, and then that would get a lot more views than saying, this guy's actually not that bad, you know? So because of that, you see, let's say, like, people like Fox News villainizing Democrats and, you know, MSNBC villainizing Republicans because they know that panders to their audience and that gets a lot more traction than them trying to tell them something different. So that's a problem. But the essence of it is, even though there is that kind of pandering, a news organization still has standards. The minute you go down to, like, blogs or influencers or whatever, then we're really into the wild, wild west. These people have no standards whatsoever, right? So whatever they tell you could just be an outright lie, and there will be no process to check that. So that's even worse. So, yeah, it's a really complicated place to be. I'm not entirely sure what the conclusion of this conversation can actually be. Yeah.
Neither are we, to be honest. It's just we're just throwing out questions into the world.
Yeah. It's. I think you'll see it continuously evolve and at a very fast rate, and it's just whoever can evolve with it will survive. You know.
Is there an element, any sort of element of elitism here, and the quality of news someone might be able or be willing to pay for?
Right. So basically, meaning like paying for a higher standard.
Pretty much, yes.
Okay. So I think that's what the New York Times is kind of tapping into. I feel that, okay, so it's a little bit different when you go to something like U.S. News, because everyone's interested in U.S. News to some extent, right? It affects the world. So you have a much bigger audience base in which to tap on. Whereas if you're talking about something like Malaysian news, only Malaysians and maybe bored Singaporeans will be interested in our news. So that's a much smaller audience and thus less monetization. So then, you know, is it actually sustainable? I don't know. I mean, to be honest with you, I really don't know at this point in time. All news organizations, as far as I know, have to make some level of compromise to stay sustainable. Generally, the way to think about it is, if you know you're not going to pay for your news, someone else will, and that person is most likely going to be either an advertiser or a politician. So, you know, we're moving into dangerous territory there.
And you know, you were saying earlier that news habits have changed in many, many ways, including the fact that the homepage is perhaps less important than it used to be. But also that speaks to how relevant social media has become. We haven't even touched WhatsApp and how news goes through there. So are we just seeing the natural progression of how news is spread and consumed? Is it going to get shorter? Are subscriptions going to be less relevant? You know, is it... Are we, in fact, whether we like it or not, headed into the Wild Wild West?
Yeah. So the news consumption behavior has definitely changed, and there's no going back to that. I don't think you're going to get, like, people going to homepages suddenly, you know, en masse. It's going to be primarily curated content. And that is a challenge for any publisher, because I believe that I saw a YouTube video about this channel called Veritasium. And Veritasium is one of my favorite YouTube channels. They talk about a lot of educational physics type stuff. And he said basically, like, he was continuing to educate people on YouTube until he found out that even people that subscribe to him don't see all of his video uploads, because YouTube is prioritizing random discovery of new videos versus, like, your subscriptions to your channels. So it's moving away from any of us having any sort of captive audience. And this is extremely difficult. I mean, last time, you know, when you buy a newspaper, you buy the same paper every day, and every day, like, you can depend on the reporting, and you pay for it. So you know, they're sustainable and you get good quality reporting, hopefully. But now, because it's democratized to the point where, you know, like you said, it's the Wild Wild West, right? Everyone just clicks on whatever touches their fancy at that point in time. You can probably make a lot more money using creating cat videos than you can actually covering quality news. And it's a lot cheaper to create cat videos.
Yeah, all you need is a cat. Chap, yeah. Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
All right, no worries. I pray for all of us. Have a good one, guys.
Thank you. You,
thank you,
too.
You too.
That was Lau Chap On, co-founder and editor-in-chief of ChiliSauce.my. And we find ourselves, I think as we always knew we would, with more questions at the end of it about where we're all headed, I think.
I imagine a future where, you know, there might be just new subscription services just through WhatsApp. So if you subscribe to, say, the BBC, you pay a monthly fee of $5 and they'll send you a curated set of stories that they've done.
Which still comes back to that point about reputable, because you're going to want that curation done by somebody you trust. And then that barrier of trust remains, you know. We've been asking you, do you pay for your news and where from? How do you decide who you go to for your news? How do you decide who to trust? We want to know. Call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Faisal says, I'll pay for good journalism. And on the practice of quality journalism, I think Malaysians should be taught to most of the time practice the 5 W's and 1 H, which is, I was taught it as one husband, five wives.
Same.
Yeah, so it's how, what,
when, where, yeah. Why, who. Like, is there another one I'm missing? I feel like I'm missing one.
You are missing one, but I don't remember what you listed, so we'll have to go with that. But it is, and I agree, I think that the problem there is that people then have to question it back to the source. It's not just looking at the story and seeing whether it covers the how, what, when, where, why, and so on. Instead, it also requires you to look at the person who has provided the story and say, well, who are you? Where did you get this from? And, you know, and that level of work is something that not everybody wants to put in.
No, and neither are they able to, especially if you aren't necessarily in a place where you are time rich, and having to just confirm all your information can be arduous.
Lai Faisal says, I contribute and pay for good journalism. Right now, mostly to The Guardian, the UK news organisation, not the pharmacy. Lame joke. I apologise. Life, this is a safe space for lame jokes. We welcome it all.
We do. And on that note, I think The Guardian does something quite interesting in its format where they don't put up a paywall.
Yeah.
But at the end of every article, they say, okay, so help us support good journalism. That's an interesting one. And I believe they made some amount of profits this year with just that donation box.
Yeah, so that's my question, though. And that was the question that I put to Chuck earlier, which is, how do some organizations manage to hero themselves? Because it's not many who have successfully done that. You know, the New York Times, I get their mailers still because I unsubscribe, but I get their mailers, you know, with the help us pay for to continue the investigative work we do, help us pay for quality journalism. And when they say that, I believe it. I feel a sense of gravitas to that statement. And similarly with The Guardian, when they say, if you enjoy our investigative work, help us do that. Again, there is a sense of, yeah, I want to, and I believe that you can. And not everybody can achieve that.
Yeah, it's a difficult one too, also depending on your political leanings, right? If you think that The Guardian, for example, is extremely left-leaning and you happen to be on the right side of, on the right end of the political spectrum, you're not necessarily going to give to journalism despite thinking, well, okay, they may or may not be doing good work.
Keep those thoughts coming. Do you pay for your news? How do you decide where you get your news? Call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.